stories don't define you. How you tell them will. Hi, I'm Sarah Elkins, your host and chief story maker of Elkins Consulting.
When we share stories, whether in our personal or business lives, how we share them makes a difference in how we remember them and in how we're perceived by the people we're sharing them with. When you're listening to this podcast, I encourage you to listen and consider your own related stories. To listen and think about which stories in your life might have impacted you in a similar way. And think about how you share those stories and the messages they carry for you and for the people who are hearing them.
Well, our listeners are in luck today. I'm so eager to interview Louisa Garrett on Your Stories Don't Define You, How You Tell Them Will. And the reason is we met in such an interesting story. Just our meeting was interesting, and then where we've gone from there in our relationship just tickles me. Every time I think about it, I get a little giggle and a big smile on my face. Louisa and I connected on LinkedIn, and I checked out her profile, and I saw that she was in Dallas, and I had just been invited for one day in Dallas to meet with a team to potentially work with them and collaborate with them on projects. So I was flying from Helena, Montana to Dallas, arriving in the early afternoon, and it was mid-afternoon, and I reached out to Louisa and said, hey, I'm going to be in Dallas for one night. Your profile just totally lights me up. So are you interested in meeting with me for like a late afternoon lunch or something? And she said, yes. And this was so random. I mean, it was so random. I've known some people on LinkedIn for 10 years and not met them in person, maybe 2 days after weekend, right? Maybe a week maximum. Anyway, right. We met at a little Mexican restaurant near the hotel where I was staying. And within 15 minutes, I knew her heart. And I was sold, and I've been waiting for a great opportunity to amplify her voice. And I think now is the time to do it. So welcome, Louisa. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to chat with you.
Me too. Again.
Right.
I would love to share. I would love for you to share with our audience something about yourself that most people don't know that wouldn't be on your LinkedIn profile or your bio. And the reason I ask this question is I like for our audience to have a little context for who you are before we start diving into personal stories. So,
sure. What do you think? So, wow, that most people wouldn't know. Well, I mean, I'm the youngest of six, and I have 24 nieces and nephews, and my mom is the oldest of 16. And wow. I can't even count how many cousins I have. So yeah, I come from a big family.
Wow. That is a big family. 16 kids in your mom's family. So you have 15 aunts and uncles.
Correct.
Just on your mom's side. What about your dad's side?
On my dad's side, he died when I was young. And so I didn't really get to know him and his side, but I believe there were 8 of them.
Wow.
Right.
That would be a lot of cousins if you were in close contact with both sides. That's
exactly.
Wow. That
exactly.
is a huge family. How do you think that impacted you? I mean, I know being the youngest of six makes you behave so differently from somebody who's the oldest or the middle of six. But as when you think about the context of growing up with 5 siblings and then 15 aunts and uncles that you knew.
Yeah.
How do you think that impacted who you are?
Well, I'm the youngest, but I'm like way younger than the next brother to me. And so I was definitely the baby of the family for everybody. And growing up, they took care of me. They were there when they were around because they're so much older. So when I started growing up, they were leaving the nest. But just having them around and just being having lots of people around. Like when I meet people who are only children, I don't understand. I don't understand that dynamic. You know what I mean? Because I always had people right. around me. And then when my nieces and nephews were born, they were there. You know what I mean? So I've always had people, and that has been amazing. And I just love the energy of it. And I love how, I just love people. And I think growing up in a big family allowed me to love people because they're all different. All my brothers and sisters are very different. And so just being able see their differences and love their differences.
Huh. And to be able to find your own voice, even in the chaos of so many different voices.
Right. Exactly.
I find that the youngest has a tendency to be the loudest, because otherwise they'll never get a word in edgewise.
Yeah, I think I would agree with you on that.
Well, my younger sister, there are only three of us, but my younger sister was like that. Like, she had to make her voice heard. Otherwise we would just, you know,
right.
climb all
over. Whatever. Right. Yeah. You have to make your own noise to be seen.
Yeah. Yeah. And larger than life. It's funny too, because I always thought my sister would stay in that place, mm-hmm. you know, being larger than life. And we've kind of switched positions, which is interesting, because she was always the one that would be singing. And at the drop of a hat, my mom would say, "Karen, sing something for us." And in front of total strangers, she'd just start singing. And she had she still has a beautiful voice, like a big Broadway style voice. She's always had a big voice. And I was actually the quiet one. I was shy. I didn't do much.
Yeah.
I was kind of shy. And now my sister is like the mom, and kind of the soccer mom. And she's also working full time. She has a big voice when it comes to social justice issues.
She works
for an organization called Rubicon Programs in East Bay, in the Bay Area. And so she is very noisy about diversity and inclusion, which is awesome. But like, I'm the one that sings in a rock band. And who would have thought that? I mean, so is there anything like that in your family that, starting out, there was like a different thing that you guys all ended up in weird places, or?
Like I said, we're all different. My oldest brother he is loud. Like, he's the oldest. And he, like, even his just talking voice is loud. And, but he's a truck driver, but also a motivational speaker, which isn't surprising. And then my oldest sister has always been the quiet one, but the one who is the rock of the family. Like, if you need something, then that's who you go to. And so, I mean, she's played that role, and that's the role that she has. And then my second oldest brother and my second oldest sister are the wild kids.
The middle child. They're right. The middle children.
Right.
And, yes, tell me about it.
Right. I think growing up, we all had our positions, and I think we pretty much stuck with them. And
so they were wild young. Your middle sibs were...
Oh yeah.
Wild. Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. That's interesting. Huh?
Yeah. So, but they're fun. They're hilarious, actually. If I need a good laugh, I'll go around them.
They're the Weasley twins in Harry Potter.
Right.
So I'm curious, and I'm sure you have a theory on this. You guys all stayed close, like, geographically, right?
Yeah, so pretty much we all live in the Dallas area, but my oldest sister was in the Army. She was in the Army for 21 years, so she traveled all over, but she lives here now. And we've all pretty much geographically lived here. I went to school in Denver, and then I lived in Boston for a couple of years, but, you know, I'm back here now.
Right. So I guess where I'm going with this is, I wonder if sometimes those roles in your families stay more clear and defined because you've stayed close together, and there's a certain expectation of who you are by the people who have known you your whole life.
You know what? That's a good point. And I think so. I think so. Because even during the times when I was in school and living in Boston, I would come home and I would fit right back in. And so
we're
just really close. And even like in our disagreements, we're still close, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah. I think everyone knows their lane, and they stay in their lane.
Huh. I find that really interesting, because, you know, I think about how my family has split geographically. Uh-huh. We are very, very close. Like, we see each other at least once a year, sometimes twice a year. We call each other. We've been Zooming more because we can't go see each other. So,
yeah.
But what I noticed is that when I left home, my personality blossomed in a way that I'm not sure it would have had I stayed geographically close.
Yeah. I think that maybe that's what happened to me when I went to school. Like I always had, I was like we said at the beginning, I always had that, you know, hey, look at me. but it allowed me to really step into my voice when I moved away because I didn't have them around me. You know, still having that same voice though.
And you could explore your identity a little more deeply because no one was telling you who you were
right. When
you weren't around your family.
Right, exactly.
So what's really interesting about this is it comes right full circle. The research that's being done about storytelling in families, the family narratives, and that our identities are shaped somewhat by the stories other people tell about us in front of us.
Mm-hmm.
So when you consequences of that as a parent,
right.
The stories I tell about my kids in front of them start to contribute dramatically to their identity, how they see themselves and the world. And the danger is when you're in that transition period between teens and young adulthood, and you're starting to explore that aspect of yourself. And if the stories your parents are telling or the people that are around you that you love and admire or that are just part of your inner circle, when they're telling stories that don't jive with how you want to see yourself as an adult, there's conflict there. And some of that is totally natural. Like because you're separating yourself, you're setting certain boundaries so that you can be an adult. But sometimes it causes really damaging friction in relationships, either internally for the person who's trying to establish themselves in a different way.
Yeah. But they're seen
or
as.
Or between them because there's that unit. Right. Exactly. So, the reason I wanted to talk to you now and start really hearing your voice in a different context outside of the Make Kind Loud, which I love, by the way. I wear my Make Kind Loud hat all the time. And just today, I carried my Make Kind Loud tote bag to my client appointment when I was working with a team doing active listening communication workshop. And I carried chocolate in it. Because what's kinder than giving people chocolate, really?
Right. I have a friend who lived in England, and when I first started Make Kind Loud, she has a daughter, and I think she was 6 or 7 at the time, and her daughter was like, it's like chocolate, like, you know, make chocolate loud because chocolate makes me happy. And I said, yes, it's like that.
Oh, I'm so glad to see I'm on the same page as that little girl. That's hilarious. I love it. So what are you doing now? Like what's the income producing activity that you're working through right now in your business?
Thank you. So I do a lot of speaking and either in groups or at conferences, just talking about how we can use our voices in kindness and how it is important to amplify kindness, because if we don't, then we're not setting examples for other people of how kindness can work. And kindness is something that is different in every aspect of your life, but what I mean by that is that it shows up in different ways, but you can still amplify kindness just by walking in it. And so I teach about that in corporations in regards to the people that work there, because in business, the people are your business. The people who work for you are your business, and making sure that it's a kind environment. And then also within conferences and going into schools as well, letting them know that kindness is not something that just is a word, but it's an action. And if we all do the act of being kind, then we can change the world for the better. And so that's my mission in life. My goal is to just keep speaking about it and putting on these summits so that other people can, you know, feel okay with amplifying their voices and kindness as well.
Mm-hmm. That makes total sense to me. And the workplace needs that more than ever. Especially if we're going to continue to work virtually, people need to understand what kindness looks like in that context, which is very different from face-to-face. I mean, kindness, as far as I'm concerned, embodies all activities of relationships. So that means active listening is an act of kindness.
Exactly.
So can you tell me a story about a time when you were doing one of these workshops and you saw the light bulb go on. Like you had one of those people in a workshop that either came up to you later or that you just saw it from a distance, the oh my gosh, I get it. I get it.
Right. And so I do a lot with PR companies, PR firms, and public relations firms, their business is amplifying other businesses, right? And their business mm-hmm. is trying to make sure that the client is happy. And sometimes the client can be difficult. And so when I was doing this workshop in this one PR firm, I was like, even though the client could be difficult, the way you show up and the way you represent yourself and your firm has to be in kindness so that they can see it and they can understand how they should interact with you. If you don't show people how to treat you, then they're going to treat you anyway if you allow it. And just because a client is demanding doesn't mean that they have to be nasty in regards to it, or doesn't mean that you have to respond in nastiness in regards to their nastiness, if that makes sense. And so,
so you're modeling. Yeah.
Exactly. And so as I was talking about this to the PR firm, like I literally saw maybe two or three people were like, oh, like I don't have to feed into that. You don't. I mean, they can continue doing what they're doing, but you can respond in a kinder, more gentler way so that they understand that even though these are the parameters of which this contract has been laid out, then this is what we're going to give you, but I'm going to tell you this in a kinder way, no matter how much they're barking at you. Because people can bark all day long, but if you don't respond, then they're just barking to themselves.
Right. So when have you done that, where you were able to respond in kindness to somebody who wasn't being kind? But you felt really satisfied when you walked away.
Yeah. So I do that quite often, actually. And because before my kindness journey, I was super sarcastic. So I could come back with a response very quickly. Like if you thought you were going to hurt my feelings, oh, don't you worry. I'm going to hurt your feelings.
Yeah.
And so I was super, super, super sarcastic. And once I decided to flip the switch and live a more kinder life, live in a more gentler way, then I had to take pause in how I responded to people. I had to think about it. And I still do that today because the sarcastic me is still inside of me. But because I've worked out this kindness muscle for the last 8 or 9 years, my kindness muscle is much stronger than my sarcastic muscle. But at the very beginning, it was a struggle because I was just like, okay, I got you. But then I had to dial it back and say, no, you can't say that. And the reason for that change is because of one of my nieces and nephews. She, one of my nieces lived with me during her high school years. And she would always tell me, like if I told her to clean her room or do her homework or whatever, she would always say, it's not what you say, it's how you say it. Now, mind you, she was like 15. And I'm thinking, do your homework.
Right.
What I told you to do. And she would always respond, it's not what you say, it's how you say it. And that was sarcastic, Louisa, right? And then fast forward a few months later, someone said something to me that was completely off the wall. And I thought to myself, well, why did you say it like that? And then her little voice and said, it's not what you say, it's how you say it. And so from that moment, literally from that moment on, I decided that if I wanted my nieces and nephews to be kind humans, productive citizens, good people, then I needed to model that behavior so that they could see that. And so every day, if someone comes to me in attack mode, like I have to just say, you know, they're going through something. I have no idea what's happening in their life. Maybe they had, you know, a bad situation that just came up and they're taking it out on me. And so these are the thoughts that I think before I respond, because I always say, you never know what people are dealing with. You never know what has happened in someone's life. So just because they are attacking you, it has nothing to do with you. And it has everything to do with what's happening in their world. And I can either add grease to the fire, or I could just, you know, be a little gentler with them.
Oh, I love that, Louisa. My experience with that was working in government agencies. Oh. And when people from the public would call and they would be angry about something, and I would challenge myself to see if I could end the call with them smiling. Like, you can hear it when they smile. When they say goodbye and they're smiling, you can tell the difference between when they say goodbye and they're not smiling.
Yeah.
And I remember just making this a major challenge for myself. And the reason I did it was spite.
Yeah.
I was tired of people bad-mouthing government employees. And because I worked really hard, and everyone I worked with worked really hard. Yeah. Were there some public sector employees that didn't work hard, that were just there, you know, to make time and get a paycheck? Yes. Absolutely. But the people that I was working with, especially when I was at the university system or the state library here in Montana, everyone who worked there was devoted to the service that they could provide for the people of our state. And so out of spite almost, I would kill them with kindness, as the saying goes. And I remember one time I just used this as an example in my workshop, was a guy called up and he was just furious about something. And I decided that this was going to change, that he was no longer going to be furious all the time when he called public sector agencies. So he was yelling at me, and I said, "Sir, I can't help you if you're yelling at me. I can only help you if you can calmly and reasonably explain what you're upset about." And so he kind of calmed down. He was still angry. He said, "I know it's not your fault. I'm just really angry." I said, "I hear that you're very angry, and I understand. I just need to know what the problem is so that I can find a solution." And he kind of walked me through what had happened, and I didn't have an answer for him. So I said, "I don't have an answer for you, but I know who will. So let me have your name and number, and I'm going to call you back as soon as I can get an answer for you." He said, "Yeah, sure, fine." And he very resigned. And I wrote down his name and number, and I made some calls and did some serious digging, because I was determined to turn this thing around. I out of spite, like, I just wanted to prove to him that we weren't all like that. And he had been bad-mouthing every number he had called to try to get resolution for this problem. And I remember vividly, I found the answer for him, and it took me about 2 hours. And I had sent him an email about an hour into it and said, "Still working on it. I'll get back to you as soon as I can." Because I knew after an hour, he's going to assume that nobody's going to ever get back to him. So 2 hours later, I dialed the number, and he picked up, and I said, "This is Sarah from," and I told him the agency. And you would have thought that I had handed him a box of chocolates through the phone.
With
the expression, like, you could hear it in his voice. He was shocked, first of all, that I called him back. And then he was even more shocked that I had an answer for him.
Yeah,
it wasn't exactly the solution he wanted, but it was a solution. It was an option that we could move forward with. And I remember that so vividly, because the next time I had a call like that, I had that tool. And I can tell you that he called me again about 3 weeks later and said, "This other neighbor I was talking to was asking about this, and I told him he should call you because you would be able to help him with it. So I want you to know that I gave him your number directly." And I said, "Okay." He said, "Are you okay with that?" I said, "Sure, of course." And all I could think was that I had modeled this kindness, and he was passing it along.
Exactly. And that's beautiful. That is beautiful.
That's, you know, I just wish we could. I mean, it doesn't happen every time. I wish I could do that every time.
Yeah.
So when have you had a time where you had to step back because you knew you weren't in that space for kindness? Do you remember a specific incident where you just had to take that step back because you knew you couldn't respond in the way that would feel good to your alignment with your values?
Yeah. And so I worked for a nonprofit. And this nonprofit, their mission was to help battered women. It was a shelter for domestic violence and sexual abuse. Now, the nonprofit was supposed to be, you know, offering help and whatnot, but the internal distress that was happening behind the scenes of the nonprofit was not helpful. And so I would, it was a very toxic work environment, and it was a very controlling dynamic there. And when I first came aboard, I thought, well, this is odd, because you can feel energy. You can feel the energy when you meet people. You can feel energy when you walk into a situation. And so the energy was off for me for an organization that was supposed to be helping people. And so in order for me to be there, I had to detach a little bit. Like, I had to be who I am, but I also had to detach so that they didn't infiltrate with the lack of a better word, but so that they wouldn't infiltrate my energy, because the energy around was so negative. And I stayed there for a year and a half, and people ask me now, they're like, well, why were you there so long if the environment was so bad? Because I firmly believe that we're put in situations not for yourself, but for other people. And so when other employees saw how I was being treated and saw how I responded, then I could see them responding differently as well. And so I had, but in order to do that, I had to detach a little bit, and I had to step back and say, this is, has nothing to do with me again. Like, this energy is not me, but I have to shine my light anyway. And it was hard. Every day
it was hard.
Yeah, and it was hard, and I just sometimes was like, "Oh my God, like, what is going on with these people?" But I had to continue being me so that I could shine the light on the people that I was meant to shine the light on. Not everyone, and it might have been just one or two. You know, it might have just been one or two, but those one or two people needed my energy. And so I had to be there for them. And I get that. But at the same time, walking the kindness journey in toxicity is hard. It's very, very draining, and it's very emotional, and it's taxing. And so for me, it was a struggle, but I knew I had to do it anyway.
Right. Of course. But I'm guessing, though, that there was a time where you had to learn that lesson to not fall into the mud like that. I know I did. I even learned it as a pattern, that it was something that I had done before, and that I had to learn. It's like you said, there's a reason you're put into certain situations. The universe knows what lessons you need to learn and what lessons other people need you to be around for. And one of the times I started bad-mouthing one of my bosses because... She was treating me so badly, and I was falling right into that mud with her. And what I realized at some point when I kind of got caught, I was at a local grocery store, and I was so frustrated, and she had been so mean to me. And one of the employees was a friend of mine, and I was visiting with him in one of the quiet aisles, and I turn around, and not 12 feet away, my boss is in line. And I felt horrible. I felt like a horrible person that was totally out of alignment for my values and who I think I am and how I want to be perceived. And it was that moment that I realized, oh my gosh, I am letting her drag me down into that space. And I don't like myself there.
Right.
And I think when we don't like ourselves, it's even easier to fall into those traps, because you kind of let go of that. Those values, you kind of, once you've gotten past them, you're like, well, I did it once, I'll just do it again.
Yeah.
It gets easier and easier to forget that integrity and lose that alignment. So what was your experience with that, where you found yourself not liking yourself?
It was pre-kindness journey. And like I said, before that, it was sarcastic all the time. And it was like I was happy to talk about people. It was like I was happy to tear them down. And one time I was a basketball coach, and coaches are supposed to be, you know, building up kids and showing them how basketball is also a reflection of life. And I was just screaming at this referee, right? Because he had made a call that I thought was ridiculous. And I was just out there just like, I can't believe you did this. And, you know, was just screaming at him in front of a room full of people, a gymnasium full of people. My players were there. Their parents were there. You know, other people were there. And I had to stop. And I was like, this is not who I want to be right now. I have these basketball players who are looking at me. And if I am treating this person like this, then what is that saying to them? And literally, I stopped mid-sentence as I'm yelling at this referee, because the referee is human as well. And it all clicked in that moment. And in that moment, I was like, I can't continue doing this, because it not only makes me feel bad, but I'm also showing this persona that is not who I really am, but at the same time, it was who I really was, if that makes sense. And so in that moment, I had to stop, because I was yelling at this person who was just trying to do his job. And the call may or may not have been the right call, but it didn't matter. The way I responded to what he called only mattered. And in that moment, I stopped and said, okay. And I, on the court, I was like, I'm sorry, continue on. And, you know, the game went on. But after that, I had to go to the referee and be like, listen, I'm so sorry. I did not mean to yell at you like I yelled at you in front of the gym full of people. Please accept my apology. And in that moment, he didn't. And I understand that, because literally I had embarrassed him. I had, you know, was just evil to him in that moment. And I get why he didn't accept the apology. But a couple weeks later, I saw him at another tournament and we had a chance to dialogue. But yeah, so I did not like myself in that moment. And I had, and that was, you know, one of the starts to me flipping the switch, is not only my niece telling me what she told me, but also me recognizing how I was treating people in different situations, and how, if someone was treating me that way, how I would feel. And so I flipped the switch on that. And I was like, wow, if someone was yelling at me the way I'm yelling at this man, I would not feel great about anything. And so I had to, you know, really take pause and say, this is not who you are. And if it is who you are, then you need to change.
That is so important. That is the key. What you just said is the key. Mm. That was who I was in that moment.
Yeah.
Nobody took over your body. There was no devil that you could blame for taking over your body. It was all you and your responsibility, your personal responsibility, to choose how you show up.
Correct.
And in that moment, you knew that that was absolutely you, but that doesn't have to be you.
Yeah.
And that's the thing I think so many people miss, is that they decide, well, this is me, take it or leave it.
Yeah.
And that's fine if you're okay with the consequences. But you, in that moment, you were not okay with the consequences, because the consequences were those students, those players were likely to treat another referee that way because they saw you do it and it's obviously okay to do.
And they thought it was okay. Yeah.
And that is not... that is not what you wanted to model. That's not the behavior you wanted to model. So you knew that even though that was you at that moment, it didn't have to be. And it didn't have to be you tomorrow. It didn't have to be you even in 15 minutes.
Correct. Correct.
Oh, that's awesome. I just got a chill.
Yeah, literally, I'm just yelling in mid-sentence. I just stopped. I was like, I'm sorry. You know, because I had to take a step back. Because I was, I felt myself like, going too far. I had already gone too far, but I felt myself like, you need to die. You need to bring yourself back. What are you doing? And in that moment, it just, I had to stop. And it wasn't enough just to stop. I also had to make sure that he understood that I understood what I did was wrong. And so,
And that is so painful to acknowledge that, to look in the mirror and acknowledge that you contributed to that. That his bad call didn't deserve your fury.
Exactly. Exactly. Not at all.
Right. It's like when you get cut off in traffic, right? And you're like so angry, but that person either A, really was oblivious, just didn't see you. It wasn't manipulative or mean-spirited. They just accidentally cut you off. Or maybe they did it intentionally and they think they're really important, but does that deserve your fury?
Right.
Of course it doesn't. Because first of all, that person doesn't even feel your fury, even if you're flipping them off. they don't care about your fury. So your fury is totally wasted. But worse yet is when you like that and you get all riled up and you're so angry, that's not good for you. That doesn't make you feel good. You're not going to have any sudden epiphany and feel better after you've screamed at this person for cutting you off in traffic and flipped them off. You're not going to suddenly go, oh, I feel better. Like, that's not really how that works.
That's not how it works at all.
I mean, sometimes yelling and screaming can make you feel better, but not usually at a person. I find that if I'm really feeling angry, if I could go for a walk in nature, I can dissipate that anger. I don't even have to do any yelling and screaming. As a matter of fact, I think getting my heart rate up, you know, doing some cardio by climbing up a mountain, scrambling up a rock face, getting your heart rate going, for some reason, that really diminishes my anger. I don't feel like I have to yell or hit something after that.
Yeah, I can understand that. Because you're in nature, you're breathing, you're looking at the beauty around you, and you're taking a moment for yourself. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I think a lot of us need to do, whether it's just a 30-second breathing exercise or if it's just, you know, going outside and let my great grandmother used to say, get up and let the wind blow through you. I didn't know what that meant, but okay. So going outside and literally letting the wind blow through you. That helps as well, but you have to recognize though, you have to own the moments, you know, you have to own those moments where you weren't, your best self. I know that's overused, but it's true. Like, you have to own the moments where you weren't your best self and acknowledge those. There's nothing wrong with acknowledging them, but once you acknowledge them and you keep doing the same thing, then you may need to reevaluate some situations. But if you acknowledge it and then make an intention to do better, that's how you learn and grow, and that's how we get better as a society.
And I think even more than saying it's a good thing to do, I think it's a critical thing to do if you want to build relationships. Because healthy relationships depend on accountability.
Correct.
And if you're not accountable for your mood or your action that hurts somebody's feelings, no matter what your intention, it's their feelings and their perception of it that matters in terms of your relationship with that person. So if you are not acknowledging that you've done something to hurt their feelings, whether it's intentional, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And I've had somebody say, I'm sorry that I hurt your feelings, but, and then they go on about why they hurt my feelings, and it had something to do with me.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's not really an apology.
Yeah. Because everything is after but negates the, I'm sorry for hurting your feelings.
Exactly. And it's so interesting to me that people want to make it about the person whose feelings are hurt. But the reason they do that, and I think about this a lot, because I have some people that I love that I'm very close with that do that.
Yeah.
And it drives me crazy. I'm like, just say you're sorry. Just acknowledge that you hurt me. You don't have to qualify it.
Yeah.
Because hurting me, no matter what your intention was, isn't nice. And I'm sure you didn't mean to. So, but what I found is that it's generally really sensitive people that have trouble with that, because then they have to internalize, they have to know in their hearts that they did something that hurt somebody they love.
Yeah.
And that is painful.
Exactly.
To acknowledge like that. So
it is.
I think that's one of those things that I hope any listeners who struggle with apologizing understand that level of vulnerability is what connects you more tightly with the person in front of you. Your ability to say, I didn't mean to hurt you. I need you to use this language to talk to me because that will be helpful to me. Right. I did not mean to hurt you with my words. You know, explain how you can do it differently. Even because I know I've done some really stupid things and I've earned somebody getting very frustrated with me.
Right.
Like, I buying the wrong brand of something when somebody was very specific about the brand they wanted and I buy the wrong brand. And of course that's frustrating to that person. But saying something mean because you're frustrated, that's natural. It's a human thing. But being able to take that step back and say, I know you didn't do this to piss me off. And I'm sorry I got angry with you, but I told you a brand because that is a specific brand I wanted to use. So yeah, but I think it's a sensitivity. I think it's a hypersensitivity that makes people struggle with that.
I agree. And I think it goes both ways too. Like even the person who is hurt, they are sensitive as well, right? And so it's the acknowledging of hurting that person, period, whether you meant to or not, as you discussed, whether you meant to or not, it doesn't matter. The only thing that matters is that they were hurt. And then how can y'all communicate better in the future so that it isn't this way? And so it's just about communication and opening up and being honest. And sometimes those conversations are hard. Sometimes you don't want to have those conversations because those feelings are raw and tender. And maybe you don't want to dig into them. But in order to have better relationships, in order to have better communications with people, I think you have to. You have to let people know when they hurt you, because sometimes they hurt you and they don't even realize it.
Most of the time.
If you never express it, right? They never realize it. And then it comes to a point where you're so upset because there's been a pattern, but yet you haven't said anything, and then you hit a wall and then it explodes. Something that's small as buying a different brand is this big thing now because something has happened over and over again.
Consistently.
But right. I haven't said anything about it.
Because you're not listening to me. Brand. You're not listening to me. Right. Well, and that's it. Like this person had said this multiple times to me, but clearly I wasn't listening. And that's why he was so frustrated.
Yeah.
He had said it more than once to me. And I don't know why it hadn't flipped in my head. It just wasn't a priority. It hadn't flipped in my head. And
ooh, that's so, a key.
Yeah, it just wasn't in that place to really listen. And that's, I mean, that is my fault. That's all me. But again, it comes down to what kind of behavior do you want to model for the people around you?
Right.
So as we kind of wrap this up, if you could give advice to somebody who had that same sarcastic or kind of fury at certain incidents where you were able to shut that off and fight it for a while until it became a more natural muscle to flex, what would that advice be? And how would you suggest somebody kind of choose to shift that?
Right. And it really is a personal choice. And it is something that you have to, it has to be a priority for you, right? And so flipping the switch to being kinder was a priority for me because of the young people in my life, my nieces and nephews, my basketball babies, the people who look up to me. That's why it became a priority to me. And again, my advice would be take it one interaction at a time. Even to this day, I have to take it one interaction at a time because I may show up not great in one situation, but literally 2 minutes later with a different interaction, I can show up and be kinder. And so don't beat yourself up over the fumbles, because the fumbles will occur. The fumbles are still occurring in my life 8 years down the road. At the very beginning, they're going to be a lot more frequent. But in those fumbles, just recognize it and don't beat yourself up about it, and just be better the next interaction. And that is my biggest advice. It's really one step at a time. And it's a personal choice. Like, you have to choose how you want to show up in this world every single day with every single person that you meet and every single interaction that you have. There's not a blanket answer to any of it. It's just how you choose to walk in the world, how you choose to show up, and showing up in love and showing up in kindness, offering grace, not only to other people, but to yourself, because again, it's not going to be easy, but it is possible if you make that choice.
I love that. I especially love that idea of taking it one interaction at a time, like Kimberly Davis and her brave leadership. Your brave unfolds one situation at a time, and not to give up because you had a bad interaction. As a communication coach, just a week ago, I had an interaction with my husband that I was not happy with. And I remember walking away from it going, Sarah, you're a communication coach. Come on. You totally messed that up. And it does get easier to stay out of alignment the more you do that, the more you let yourself. So yeah. I think it's really important to, you're right, to make that choice. So Louisa, thank you. This was a lovely conversation. Very insightful. Lots of light bulb moments for me in this last 50 minutes or so. And I am really looking forward to seeing more of what you're doing as your business progresses and grows and shifts, because we all know it transforms one day at a time.
Yes. Thank you for talking to me, having me on. This has been beautiful, and I appreciate you and your heart.
Oh, thank you, Louisa. And for our listeners, there will be a blog post associated with this podcast at elkinsconsulting.com where you can learn a little bit more about Louisa. I will have a link to her LinkedIn profile so you can connect with her there, and a link to her website so that you can learn more about what she does and maybe hire her for your next virtual team building conversation. Thanks, Louisa.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Your Stories Don't Define You, How You Tell Them Will. If you're planning an event or company retreat and want to bring in a memorable, entertaining, and highly practical speaker as your keynote speaker or workshop facilitator, please visit us at elkinsconsulting.com to learn how we can help and provide a memorable keynote or breakout session. Thank you. I look forward to hearing from you.